Welcome to the Jason Podcast. I'm Josie Briggs, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. Each month, we talk about work in the current issue. I hope these conversations prompt you to go to your mailbox and pull up the issue or go to our website. This month, I want to talk about work in this month's issue that tackles a cost issue. Comparing costs associated with hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis. I think we in the renal community need to talk more about cost. End-stage renal disease care is costing our health payers, mostly us as taxpayers, staggering sums. We need collectively to engage to make sure these funds are well spent and that our patients are getting the best care our dollars can buy. I am very delighted to have with me today Dr. Lecha Tumalapalli. Dr. Tumalapalli is Assistant Professor of Population Health Sciences, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell. She is emerging as one of our discipline's experts on policy issues, publishing extensively on ways in which policies and costs can improve care of patients with kidney disease. She, together with her co-author, Eugene Lin, has contributed a valuable editorial to this month's issue. And I'm so delighted to have her expertise in talking about this topic. Dr. Tumalapalli, thank you for joining me.
Glad to be with you.
You provided our readers with a very insightful examination of a study in this issue. Senior author is Kevin Erickson. The title of the paper is Comparing U.S. Medicare Expenditures for Hemodialysis and Peritoneal Dialysis. It's a data-packed paper. Your editorial is entitled, Is Home Dialysis the Way Forward for Medicare? Assessing Potential Cost Savings with Peritoneal Dialysis. Now, I urge our listeners to read your editorial. It's a quick read that lays out the issues very well. The takeaway, I would simplify it and say it something like this. Yes, PD can probably save money, but there's much more in this paper than that. So, first, in talking about studies like this, I think it's often helpful to begin by reminding our listeners what data resources they used to make this study possible. They turned to the USRDS, so what are the limitations and strengths of USRDS for this type of work?
Yes, as many of the listeners know, USRDS contains registry data for all patients with end-stage renal disease in the United States. And these come from a variety of data sources, including the 2728 forms, which capture patient characteristics at the time of incident ESRD. Also CrownWeb data, which is now called EQRS, which is data that dialysis facilities report to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And all this registry data is linked to 100% Medicare claims. So it's really a wealth of information on all patients with ESRD in the U.S. So these authors, Jennifer Kaplan and Kevin Erickson and colleagues, focused on a subset of patients in the USRDS database, specifically ESRD patients who were age 67 and above, because those older patients were continuously enrolled in Medicare even prior to ESRD. And the authors also focused on a very important time period from 2008 to 2015, because about halfway through that period in 2011, the reimbursement system for dialysis changed to the ESRD prospective payment system. So during this time of the study period that they analyzed, there was a pretty marked increase in PD from about 6% to closer to 10%. So it's a really interesting question to see what happened to costs as PD was rising during this time period.
Yeah. Can you remind everyone listening why observational comparisons between PD and HD are so challenging?
Yes, it's exceedingly challenging because these two populations really differ. Patients on PD are on average younger, they have better functional status, are often tied into nephrology care prior to progressing to ESRD, And they also have to have adequate housing to do PD and the cognitive and physical capability to do dialysis at home, and often have social support from a family member or other care partner. So, you know, there's differences between these two populations of PD and HD. And it's important to note that a lot of these social factors and physical functioning are not well captured in claims data. They're not measured in claims or other data sources. So even if you adjust for comorbidities, there can be a lot of residual confounding.
How'd they get around that?
Yeah, so these authors used propensity score methods, which has the advantage of ensuring that these populations are more comparable and they have good covariate overlap. So what the authors did is they calculated a propensity or a score of how likely a patient was to start PD based on all their characteristics. And then they matched patients who started PD with patients who were equally likely to have started PD but ended up starting HD instead. And they compared costs between PD and HD across these two very similar groups of patients. And the authors did a really nice job of matching patients based on a long list of demographics, comorbidities, social factors like Medicaid and low-income subsidy eligibility, and even pre-dialysis nephrology care. So they really accounted for a vast list of covariates, but it's important to note that propensity score methods can still be subject to unobserved confounding. Any unmeasured variables like healthy behaviors or adherence or some of the social factors we mentioned before, these propensity score methods are not able to take into account these unmeasured factors.
Right. I think for listeners who are nephrologists and actively involved in patients with modality, with this big modality choice, there really will be an awareness of how many patient factors, like social supports. One that's mentioned often is frailty, but these factors very much impact the choice between HD and PD. I think the propensity matching is a reasonable attempt to get around this. But if the confounders are missed, it's not a surprise that frail people or people without these supports maybe need more care. Before we get into the depth of the factors, let me ask you to stand back a little and say, when you read over the Erickson study, what were the findings that really stood out for you as you looked through the findings in this paper?
Yeah, so these authors compared about 8,000 patients who started PD with 8,000 matched patients who started HD. And they found that average costs were higher for the HD patients at about $109,000 per year, whereas PD patients had an annual cost of about $92,000 per year. And costs in general for dialysis patients, I like to think about this as about a third of the costs are the actual dialysis treatments itself and dialysis administered medications. A third of the costs are hospitalizations, and then a third are other costs, so post-acute costs, so for inpatient rehab, medications, dialysis access complications, other medical appointments. So they also found in a fully adjusted model that costs were 11% higher for HD patients compared with PD patients, and this remained consistent over time. And the greatest differences were found in rehabilitation costs, dialysis access complications, so access complications were higher for HD patients, and kind of other non-dialysis spending was higher for HD patients compared with PD patients. And interestingly, HD was only more expensive than PD in year one after incident ESRD. But in years two and three, patients on PD actually had higher expenditures. And higher costs for PD were really concentrated in the first 90 days, which suggests that higher costs associated with hospitalizations and readmissions in that time period, for example, unplanned or crash dialysis starts, really accounted for a large portion of these cost differences.
Yeah, this is very striking, especially since these patients were at least matched in, as best they could for pre-end-stage care. The crash start is in itself such an important issue. There's been a lot of attempt to encourage early placement of dialysis access, but that's not been without its problems. Why is the crash start such a cost driver?
Absolutely. Yeah, we know it's a major source of preventable hospitalizations, and hospitalizations are the most costly aspect of care. And it's associated with worse patient outcomes as well. So higher mortality, catheter-associated bloodstream infections. So I think it's both a cost driver and suboptimal for clinical outcomes. So that's why it's been a major focus of some of our new initiatives, including some of the new payment models through CMMI, for example, Kidney Care Choices. And those models aim to increase optimal dialysis starts and try to reduce this preventable spending category.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to learn how that works and to follow. I'm sure you're following that closely. It's something I think our readers will be really interested in. Now, this is all about costs, but I think it's also important to at least talk briefly about the impact of these choices on the actual patient experience. Major goal of the Kidney Health Initiative is increasing home dialysis, a good goal, I think we all agree. For many people, dialysis in the home is less disruptive of their lives and a gentler intervention. But that may not always be the case. What are your thoughts on the pressure to increase home dialysis and how to make sure this doesn't occur at a price for patient experience?
Certainly, yeah. I think PD is associated with numerous benefits, so including preservation of residual renal function, less cramping, less myocardial stenting, and better quality of life, although much of that might be due to selection bias. So I think these data from Erickson and colleagues are really helpful because they show that the economic benefits as PD has expanded, you know, have really kind of remained consistent. But I think overall our goal should be to educate patients about their kidney disease, about all the modalities available to them, including conservative management, and then work with patients individually based on their values, their preferences, to find the modality best for them. So I think a lot of these initiatives, you know, they recognize that patients aren't getting the patient-centered education that that they all deserve.
Right. You mentioned briefly in your editorial a study carried on by your colleague Eugene Lin using trial emulation methods. He's getting at cost issues in that study. But I am wondering whether trial emulation methods could help us get better answers to the many unresolved questions in the PD versus hemodialysis choice. Comments, your thoughts on where trial emulation will help us?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that clinical trials of PD versus HD have been attempted in the past. So, for example, there was a trial in the Netherlands in the early 2000s, but those have been stopped due to low recruitment. So we have been relying on a lot of this observational data. And I do think causal inference methodologies can be helpful in assessing this question. The study that you referred to by Eugene Lin and colleagues uses an instrumental variable approach. And so instrumental variables are when a third variable, the instrument, is used, like distance to the hospital or a policy change, and that third outside variable makes some patients more likely to receive a treatment than others. And it aims to randomly assign patients to different treatments. So, for example, the study by Eugene Lin uses the timing of the month And because there's a waiting mm-hmm. period for Medicare coverage for patients less than age 65, the time of the month can influence whether patients are started on PD versus HD. And so they use that approach to try to look at cost differences between PD and HD. And interestingly, they did not find differences in cost. And that was limited to the first year after dialysis start, and was also limited to an uninsured population. So some differences in the patient population.
It's a very clever approach. Yeah, it's a very clever approach. A good instrumental variable is sometimes a wonderful substitute for randomization. I spend much of my life in a rural area of Maine, and people here are very far from dialysis facilities, and as a consequence, PD is used more. But it's an interesting way to get at some of these questions. So, Dr. Tamalapalli, what is the takeaway for our listeners? What should we be thinking about collectively as we look at the interesting collection of findings that Dr. Erickson and his colleagues have put together for us?
We really urge readers to view these data holistically and to take advantage of this detailed analysis where we can understand all these granular cost categories of all the different categories of where costs accrue. So the paper, it's really not just about comparing PD and HD costs, but gives us the opportunity to identify what are the highest yield categories of preventable spending for patients receiving dialysis. And then we can begin to design and test interventions to tackle these different cost areas at the same time of also assessing quality of care and clinical outcomes.
Terrific. Urge our listeners to look at this work and to come back next month when we talk about work in the next issue. Thank you, Dr. Tamalapalli. A very enjoyable conversation.
This podcast is copyrighted by the American Society of Nephrology. All rights reserved. All content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. This podcast should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or other qualified healthcare professional if you have any questions about any medical condition or before taking any drug, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the American Society of Nephrology.